You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming like female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7? Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. You cannot follow your passion. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
Simplify your life with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. Stay connected anywhere and transform your vehicle into a dependable Wi-Fi hotspot. Navigate easily by powering apps like real-time GPS and voice assistant. Keep everyone entertained with Wi-Fi for up to 10 devices. Even on the practice field, AT&T in-car Wi-Fi keeps you connected while in proximity of your vehicle. Work, stream shows, or finish homework without missing a beat. Discover the convenience and see if you're eligible for a free trial at att.com/in-car Wi-Fi. Don't let connectivity roadblock your journey. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required. This is the most dramatic podcast ever. An iHeartRadio podcast. Chris Harrison and Lauren Zima coming to you with a very, very cool episode today. We have this great guest. It's Dr. Amy Shaw, double board certified medical doctor and wellness expert specializing in food allergies, hormones, gut health. She graduated from Cornell University's world-renowned School of Nutrition. She's trained at Cornell, Harvard, Columbia. Elsie, you started following Dr. Shaw kind of during the pandemic, right?
I think so, yeah. And I think she was one of those people, I want to get into it with her, but who kind of used the pandemic to really build up her presence on social. She gives incredible bite-sized, short, helpful content on her Instagram page that I love. And she, especially after we just did that episode about weight loss drugs, yes, I wanted to have her on to talk about this different element of health, but still has so much to do with our fitness and our aesthetic and how good we feel about ourselves. But fasting, our gut health. She yeah. gets into that a lot on her page. So I wanted to talk to her about the realities of some of that, because I think there's a lot of confusing content out there.
Well, and there's so many fads and things that hit the market. And some of these things are very valid. There's a lot of validity to them, but are we doing them the right way? And that's a lot of the stuff I want to talk to her about with gut health and saunas and cold plunges and intermittent fasting, all these things that I think are very, very good if they are implemented correctly with the right body type, et cetera. So anyway, we are beyond honored and excited to have Dr. Shaw join us on the show today.
So Dr. Shaw, I think I started following you in the pandemic. Where am I? Do I have this right? Did you kind of use that time a couple years ago to really build your social media presence? And if so, why was that important to you? And what have you kind of gotten out of it?
Absolutely. You know, when you work in traditional medicine, there's a lot of doctors on social media. But when I first started, it was kind of like you weren't really a good doctor if you were doing stuff on the internet. Those are, right. That was for the people who are like not really doctors, or they're not academic, or they weren't. So it was all natural medicine. So there was definitely this like, took me a little time to really get comfortable. But then I realized that everybody was using it more for informational purposes, and it didn't mean that you couldn't present the science and basically just present the issues through the lens of my background and training. I'm going through it too. So it's something that I feel really comfortable speaking about.
So your handle is Fasting MD for people who don't follow you yet and should. What would you, if people aren't following you right now, how would you just summarize what you try to do with your content and the information you try to present?
It's nutrition and medical tips to help you save yourself. So using nutrition and medicine, you can actually save yourself. We're always thinking, oh, there's this medicine, there's going to be like this life-saving drug, there's going to be somebody who's going to help me. But really, when you do eat the right foods and do the right things and, you know, get sunlight and go for a walk, and those are the ways to save yourself. So we're talking about ways to save ourselves through nutrition.
One of the things I really appreciate about you and Lauren and I are very much of this mindset of preventative wellness, preventative living. That is kind of your lifestyle of how do you live? How are you eating? And so you won't face those issues.
Exactly. Because we never talk about it. We're always talking about what happens once you get the disease, or you, you know, are in that car accident, or it's like, how do we teach people to live differently? Because if you live the default American life, you are going to get those diseases and you are going to need all those medications. So there's really not enough guidance around the nutrition side of it.
Before LZ jumps back in, I'm just curious, Why is American medicine like that? How did we?
I was just thinking that so strong. Yeah. What you just said, if you live the default American life, you are guaranteed to have those issues. Can you elaborate on that?
And I hate to bang on them. Is it pharma? Is it just because that's where all the money is? Is it that simple?
Yeah, to run a research trial, it's not easy. It takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of time and resources. And who's going to fund a research trial on, you know, lettuce or cucumbers? Yeah. You know,
we need big lettuce to come in with some money.
Pfizer versus big lettuce,
right? So who's gonna get the funding to do these research trials? And then somebody might say to you, well, there's a research study on Lipitor, but there's no research study on fiber. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's how it kind of shifted. And pharma knows that. They're very smart. They know that in order to win the hearts and minds of scientists, they're gonna have to do these big trials, and they invested in that. And that's why I truly believe it's because we live in this like capitalistic society. Like, you know, you want to make money. So they know the ways to kind of sway the science a little bit. I'm not saying that they're all bad. Obviously, there's medications that are life-saving, but it's really skewed the wrong way.
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. I mean, there is government funding for, you know, things like diet and nutrition, but it's so, so hard to do these large nutrition studies. You need a lot of money and a lot of resources. So there's not enough.
Well, something I've been kind of preaching about or ranting about to Chris since we started dating is, especially just what role food plays in our lives and the quality of food we get in America. To me, the simplest and clearest example is this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this sort of crazy statistic that to be a doctor in America, you go to school for years, but you only take like something like 1 hour of nutrition. Is that true? And why do you think that is? Why are our medical schools not putting more of a focus on preventative medicine?
That was true in my time, and that was true for many years. Things are really changing a lot. Like, I went to Cornell undergrad for nutrition, and now they have a very strong program with their medical school to kind of have a nutrition presence. It's definitely changing, but it's not changing fast enough, and there's not enough knowledge. I think because we thought it was two different worlds. And like, when I went to nutrition undergrad, there was like two paths outside that you could be a dietitian, and most of those dietitians worked in the hospital, or you could work for a food company. And that was pretty much the two pathways for nutrition. Like, medicine was not one of the preferred pathways out of nutrition. It was like a completely separate world. And I think we're learning more and more about how food affects our bodies. Like you said, our mood, our, affects the way we show up on a daily basis. So I think now people are connecting the two. You're right. Like, it really took forever and it's still not enough.
So there's a lot of fads out there. There's a lot of just kind of things that we say, and I want to start hitting some of these, and we're going to rapid fire through as best we can. I was lucky enough to have a wonderful general practitioner back when I was living in Los Angeles, and he was really early on gut health.
Yeah.
And I know you preach a lot about gut health, but what does that mean? and how can we have good gut health?
Okay, gut health is such a buzz, phrase, gut health. Gut health really changes. The number one way we can change our gut is through diet. So nutrition is the pathway to better gut health. Now, exercises too. So nutrition and exercise, those are the things that are going to heal your gut. And the gut is really the center of our gut-brain connection. That's really the center of our bodies. It makes all the decisions. And so when you take care of the mind, just like we talk about all the time, you have to take care of the gut as well.
Okay. What are the gut bombs, the gut don'ts? What's the gut do's?
You know what, Dr. Shah, I know one that you're going to say, because I just saw it on your Instagram. And as we were just on vacation in Mexico drinking a lot of tequila, I don't want to hear it. But give it to us straight.
Yeah. So, the data on alcohol is so strong about the fact that, it's not about no alcohol if you love it, prefer it. But that whole thing about how we thought having a drink or two or three every night was going to be healthy. I mean, everyone intuitively knew that it wasn't really healthy, but you couldn't put your finger on it. So now we know that it's really a lot less than we thought that's beneficial for you. It's like 2 to 3 drinks a week. You can have them all at once, or you can have them spread out. And obviously there's times you're going to have more and less, but on average, if that's what you do, that's kind of the sweet spot. If you love to drink, if you don't love to drink, just stop it altogether. So it has a alcohol obviously is dehydrating. It's a toxin for your body. So your body has to work to get rid of it. It also has effects on the gut bacteria that are negative. So you really do want to limit or cut that alcohol out. That's one of the gut bombs. Another gut bomb is antibiotics. Antibiotics have been overused for so many years. And you're in Mexico. People probably said to you, just take antibiotics with you in case, or just take them in advance. Or there's so much overuse of antibiotics, and, antibiotics kill the bad bacteria, but they also kill all the other bacteria. So you're left with a sterile gut, which is not what you want. We are looking for we want an Amazon jungle like gut with lots of species and different growths of bacteria, because they help us flourish and get nutrients from foods. If you kill them all off by consistently taking antibiotics or overusing them on your skin or eating foods with antibiotics in it, you end up with kind of a barren field. If you can see that visual between a barren field and a dense rainforest, that's what a lot of Americans live with, is that barren field.
We want to be in the rainforest, in the jungles of the Amazon. Yes. Okay. So alcohol and antibiotics. Okay. Now, I heard this comparison with alcohol, and please give it to me right with the information. Yeah. I heard on TikTok or something that if you think about, alcohol can clean a wound, right? Like in the movies, if somebody's got nothing to do, they pour vodka on their open wound. Yeah. So someone said, think about what that's doing to your bacteria in your gut. It's fully killing everything. Does alcohol kill everything in your gut?
I mean, it's not that dramatic. It's not like a wound, right? Because we do process some of it as it goes through our bodies. Our bodies are really good at detoxing alcohol, as you know, but it's at some level, that is definitely true. The more alcohol you drink, the worse it is for your gut. The other thing that comes with alcohol often is the other gut bomb is ultra-processed foods. Ultra-processed foods now are proven to lower the length of life, make your brain and gut depressed, and kill the gut bacteria. And that's something I think we just don't talk enough about, because it's almost like, the backlash from diet culture is you should be able to eat anything. And and you should eat everything. And, you know, going through drive-throughs is great, but you have to remember that this is literally killing that gut bacteria that you're so desperately trying to keep alive.
Can I ask you on that point? I'm going to sidestep for a second, but that backlash with diet culture, as a doctor, does that worry you where we are now? Has there been too much of a swing the other way of every, you know, I mean, I love the phrase, every body is beautiful, and I believe in it, but that kind of thought and rhetoric and as you said, backlash, are we going in a dangerous way of too much welcoming of everything?
Well, I think Ozempic and all the GLP-1 agonists has changed that. I think now it's like open conversation to want to lose weight and to do it for your health. Like, I think this is, it's helped in opening up the conversation, because I think for a long time, you're right, like it was like, you couldn't really say, nobody could say they want to lose weight. It was like a secret, right? And then now, because of all these medications, it's a very open and a big conversation, and everyone wants to be on them. And so it's really kind of now swinging back to the middle, hopefully.
And hopefully in a healthy way.
We had a wonderful doctor on a recent episode, and we got into all of the different weight loss drugs with him. So we wanted to ask you kind of we definitely want to get into the losing weight without those drugs maybe, but before we get off the gut bomb topic, say we've all just come off the holidays. Say we didn't eat great. Say we had a couple cocktails. Is it hopeless, or is there a way to reset your gut and fix it? And how do you get that good bacteria back?
Yeah, we're so plastic, like, you know, plasticity in our brain, plasticity in our gut. We can change our gut in the matter of days, if not weeks. So we definitely have that power. There was a landmark study in Nature that showed that in 3 days of changing your diet very rapidly and very dramatically, they saw that the whole microbiome was shifting in its wow. bacterial species. So we have the power. They did the study. They thought it was going to be 2 weeks. So they took they put people on a very high fat, high processed food, like junk food diet. And then the next 2 weeks, they were going to do like a really clean whole foods, low sugar diet. And they found within 3 days of switching their diet, they're already changing their whole microbiome. So there's a lot of hope out there.
That is good.
Thank God.
Because I know a lot of people listening right now are probably in the midst of, you know, dry January.
Is dry January very beneficial?
Yeah, dry January is a big trend this year, and it has been over the last few years, but definitely this year even more so. And I think it's because people are finally understanding the science behind alcohol and thinking like, okay, well, let me just see, like, they're just curious, like sober curious, like, let me see how it's going to feel to stop for a month and then decide what I want to do in the long term. And I think that's a really, really great first step. It's just taking a break and seeing how you feel.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. Don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu. It took me a while to figure out my mom is more than just a mom. She's got a whole life outside of motherhood. Mary Beth, she is a force to be reckoned with. Successful career, many talents, a great friend group. I could go on and on about my mom. I love her dearly. Well, this Mother's Day, give mom her flowers. She deserves the best. That's why I'm sending Farm Fresh flowers from Bouqs. That's short for bouquets. And I got you 25% off your entire Bouqs purchase, so you can send some too. Here's why I like Bouqs. Bouqs is different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. Books has also made it easy. I went online, picked the delivery date, and I'm done. Mother's Day is May 12th, right around the corner. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Books now. And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, the wife, aunt, hey, even your grandma. Go to Books.com and use promo code Chris for 25% off. That's Books.com, promo code Chris. Books.com and use promo code Chris.
Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming like female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7? Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. You cannot follow your passion. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
Doctor, a couple other things that are happening in January. You know, Dana White talked about this. He went on this like severe fast, like a water fast. And I think it was, you know, so took some nutrients as far as supplements and stuff like that, but severe. And I have some friends that are like, I'm going to do a 3 to 7 day severe fast. Is that a thing?
Yeah. So 24-hour fast, like a dinner-to-dinner fast, is something that the Latter-day Saints have done for, you know, in their culture or in their religion, and they do it once a month. And the data for that is so strong, even when you control for all the other good things that they do in their lifestyle, like community and good food and whatever, they were able to see that doing this once a month, just dinner to dinner Sunday fast, was extremely beneficial for inflammation and heart health. So that's something that I think a lot of people can do. Doing longer fasts, I say doing longer fasts is like running a triathlon or an ultra marathon. It's not for everyone. Not everyone needs to do it, but it's for those people who really want to push to the limits. And that's the people. It's like asking you, like, should you run a triathlon? Like, sure, like if you want to, but you don't need to.
Which fast is the triathlon? Is that the 24-hour fast?
No, or going, would you six, going, three, four, five?
Yeah,
days.
Three, four, five.
So would you recommend to almost anybody do one 24-hour fast once a month?
Yeah, like once a quarter, you know, try it. So what the way you would work up to it though is, first, the hardest thing for people, I think, is doing an overnight fast. I know it sounds so stupid, but so simple. Like, oh, what do you mean? Stopping at 7 and eating at 7, 8, 9, 10? Like, that's simple. But it's really not, because we live in a world where we're eating 16, 17 hours a day. Like your last bit of food, your last snack, your last drink. So what I tell people is, like, start with extending your overnight fast. Like if you can get to 15 hours, 14, 15 hours pretty easily now, that's when you know your body's probably ready for a little bit of a longer stretch. But everyone should be able to do a 12-hour. And then between 12 and 15, it may take some practice. And it sounds so simple, but like the first time I tried an overnight fast, it was really tough for me, because I was used to having a little bit of chocolate before bed. And you know, even that 12 to 14 hours was hard.
We are so culturally trained to have dessert at night. I've realized that, like, because it's years of upbringing of like, how do you end your night? Oh, with something sweet.
Yes.
And another, a friend of mine, Kelly Levesque, who's also great on Instagram.
Yeah.
That's something she talks about a lot. She's like, I don't give my kids dessert every night. Why has this become the norm?
Yeah. Well, and obviously breakfast is breaking fast. That's the whole thing is in the morning. Can you also kind of get rid of maybe some misnomers or whatever? What actually breaks fast in the morning? Can you get up and have coffee with no sugar? Can you have green tea with maybe a pinch of honey, but is it no more than 70 calories that activates the enzymes in your stomach?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can, you really want to stay away from anything sweet like sugar, honey, or sweeteners. You can have black coffee with a splash of milk up to about, I would say 45 calories is what we usually say. And you can keep your fast going. So if you wake up, you know, you stopped eating dinner at 7 and you wake up at 6 a.m. and you want to push it till 8, 9, you know, whatever it is, then you can do that. And I am like a huge believer in breakfast. So people always think like, oh, fasting means skipping breakfast. Actually, the data over and over and over shows that eating a breakfast is really healthy for your body. And you don't necessarily need to skip it to be fasting.
It is funny. It was like breakfast had the best PR campaign for a while. It's like, it's the most important meal of the day. Then all of a sudden, there was such an anti-breakfast push.
Yes.
Well, no, this is exactly what I wanted to ask you about. I don't understand the difference of, because for a long time, I was just, I think, kind of a natural faster. Like I didn't eat breakfast and I would usually eat a light lunch as my first meal of the day.
Yeah.
But then I had all of these nutritionists and trainers telling me, you got to eat something for breakfast. But what do you mean breakfast isn't breaking the fast? This is confusing me.
Okay. So you, what I'm saying is that you can fast and still have breakfast, meaning that, for example, if you're someone who stops eating like 6 p.m. or 7 p.m., like I prefer that you have an early dinner.
Realistically, let's say 8 o'clock.
Yeah. 8 o'clock. Yeah.
People have kids and they're trying to get kids down and all that.
Absolutely. So 8 p.m. To 8 a.m. is a 12-hour fast. 8 p.m. to 10 a.m. is a 14-hour fast. And that's great, especially if you're someone who gets up in the morning, wants to work out, and you have your first meal after you work out. So what I mean to say is that you don't need to absolutely skip breakfast to be considered fasting. In fact, I prefer that you move up dinner and have a really nice time in the evening without food. That's harder, but it's just much more beneficial. If you're someone who's trying to balance your blood sugar, trying to lose some belly fat, trying to activate your gut health, like try moving up that dinner time. That's going to do a lot more.
And doctor, how important is it what you are breaking fast with? Is protein as opposed to carbs, correct?
Yeah. So I usually say for fasting, it's like the three Fs. Okay. So you do your fast overnight, circadian style. I say circadian style because we live on the sun rhythm. And so trying to time it so that you're not eating a lot after sundown and eating not too much late at night, that's the goal. And then having most of your meals during the daylight hours is like, that's kind of that circadian rhythm.
Yeah.
So fasting, three Fs are fasting, fitness, and then fiber, protein, food. So like you want to have your overnight fast, then you want to do something like get sunlight, go for a walk, some little bit of fitness. And then you break your fast with high protein, high fiber, and fermented food.
Gotcha.
Wow. Okay. The three Fs. I'm going to say F to that.
Yeah.
Can you talk though? Because we have a really heavily female audience.
Yes.
And I've gotten really into the fasting research over the last couple of years. But one thing I'm still super confused on is hormones and fasting and what works for women. Because I've seen like, don't fast during your period or, you know, menopause is going to change that. And women seem to have to deal with so many more factors.
I would add on, is there a different length of time for women as opposed to men?
Yeah. So absolutely. So menopause is, I would equate it kind of like the week before your period. Menopause and perimenopause symptoms feel like PMS, basically. The week before your period, you often feel cranky, you feel tired, you feel bloated, you're getting some water weight, and you just can't withstand the stress, both physical and mental, that you did, you know, the rest of the month. So I know for me, that week before my period, I'm not training as hard. I'm not going to be stressing my body as much. I'm not going to do as much fasting. I'm not going to do as much stressful activities at work. I'm going to try to listen to my body and be a little more cognizant about needing a little more rest And that's something that happens more magnified during menopause, that transition, because you're kind of going through that hormone fluctuation like you were going through with PMS. And so doing shorter and easier fasts is the way to go. Meaning that it doesn't mean you can't fast. It doesn't mean you shouldn't fast. It just means that you don't want to, for the first time, do a 24-hour fast that week before your period or when you're in the throes of menopause.
Got it. Okay. Did you write all that down, babe?
Yes. I have so many buzzworthy things I want to dive into.
Well, the second that you tell somebody you're having an incredible doctor on their podcast, they give you all their questions. So I also have a list of questions from my sister, my friends, my mom. I just have like this list.
Wow. Okay.
But you do too, babe. You know what? Let's get into something that we brought up and again was just from our most recent podcast, right. But Ozempic and all the weight loss drugs.
Yeah, Mounjaro, Ozempic.
Yeah.
Dr. Shah, how do you feel about them? What can they do to stay super fit without submitting to going on these prescription drugs?
You know, just like everything, I think we're kind of foretelling a little bit of the future. I think that whenever you have a lot of interest and a lot of excitement and lots of people doing something, it's almost setting itself up for some kind of disappointment after, right? Like anything you've ever seen that we've had that everybody was crazy about in terms of diet or a food or it kind of becomes really, really hot. And then something happens and then it's not as hot anymore. I mean, I can't predict the future per se, but I do think that there's going to be something. We don't have enough data. We don't have the trials that came out. They're not looking at the amount of people that are taking it and the breadth of people that are taking it. So we're going to see a lot. We're going to learn a lot over the next 10 years about what's happening and the side effects and the things to watch out for. So I don't think that it's going to be as crazy. I think things are going to settle down in terms of the regular person trying to use these medications because they're going to see the other flip side of it, which we've seen some of the flip side of it, but I think we're going to see it in big, big numbers as more and more people, you know, go on it and go off of it.
Well, I don't want anything negative to happen, but you are giving me hope.
It's the, you know, too good to be true. You know, it probably is. There's always a reciprocal balance. So there's always something that comes along with any drug you take.
Exactly. There's probably going to be something that comes out, a side effect or, kind of interaction or something that is going to be scary enough that the people that don't really need it are going to be scared off. And so then the people who really do need it, the people who actually are, you know, very, very sick and have tried everything else and are morbidly obese, you know, it's crazy to think, but we are at like 40% obesity and probably approaching 50% in not too many years. So there's a lot of people who maybe grew into, like you're born into a family of, you know, and your habits and your hormones and your gut are just programmed in a different way. And so I do think that those people are the ones who are going to actually really benefit from these in the long term. I think the rest of the people who are just doing it for, you know, aesthetic purposes, I think there's going to be something that's going to deter them. But like you said, you know, it's like any fad. There's going to be something and it's not going to be a fad anymore. At least that's my opinion.
And this was a submission from a friend of mine. She had tried some of these weight loss drugs and she said what struck her was how much it like numbs those cravings. She's like, it's like you're not reaching for the alcohol anymore. You're not, you know, like what can you, do you have any advice then on how to deal with cravings without being on those drugs? Because it blows my mind how, even for me, like we just said, at the end of the night, I'll be like, oh, I want a little piece of chocolate. Or sometimes you think, oh, I just really want a glass of wine. How do you fight cravings?
That's a great question. So GLP-1, what these medications all help release is actually something that's natural in our bodies that we can release. So eating more protein, eating more fiber, eating more probiotic foods, like these are dietary strategies to actually naturally produce GLP-1 and the other leptin and other things that make you feel full. That's what we want to concentrate on is like how do we get more of that natural secretion? So, you know, getting enough sleep, eating enough fiber, eating more protein, getting steps every day. Like, these are all ways that we can actually naturally feel less cravings.
Love it. Secretions.
Yes. There you go.
No, that really is helpful. And again, it gives me hope. And if people don't follow you, please, again, she's at Fasting MD. One thing I love about you too is that you make your videos really fun, like with your daughter. She helps you film and you guys are super cute together. Are there concerns or things that you find yourself really talking to her about as a mom about all this stuff? Like, what's one thing you feel like you see in the younger generation that you really want to instill? Because we have a teenage daughter too.
No, so it's so hard to be a teen these days. We've seen, like, even beyond, I mean, everybody's blaming it on social media, but the pressure for them, the rates of depression and anxiety are just like at levels that we've never seen before. And we don't really know what it is. And so it has to be, somewhat has to be social media, because they're seeing other people. They're seeing people, you know, looking altered versions of themselves, skinny or beautiful, or whatever it is. I think we have a lot of conversations around that. Like, what's real, what's not, what is normal, what's not. I think it can be very skewed when you're on TikTok of what's a normal girl and what's normal beauty and what's normal
filters
body.
And AI. I mean, we all used to just deal with a photoshopped photo in Cosmopolitan magazine. Now it's constantly in the palm of their hands every day, and you literally can't tell what is a full AI creation.
Yeah, so we talk about that all the time, about, you know, what's real, what's not, what's healthy, what's not, because I think differentiating that for them is so important. I really don't think that the answer is just don't let them use social media. Like, of course, when they're young, you can do that. But at some level, this is part of their life. So it's really just helping them navigate it.
You got to have that open dialogue. I mean, that's huge. It really is. And now it's for all the parents listening out there, and Lauren and I deal with it too. I mean, it's unbelievably tough. And and by the way, conversely, I wouldn't want to be a kid right now and trying to live their life.
Know.
I mean, it's incredibly difficult.
But I think it's interesting you say you can't keep them off social media. Do you just feel like that's not a realistic expectation? Like, it's out there.
Well, I think you can limit it. Like, for example, my daughter goes to a school where they put their phones in a lockbox at the beginning of the day, and then they get it back at the end of the day. And I love that, because I think, you know, then I don't feel so bad if she has an hour of social media or TV time later in the day, because I know that she's gotten a good education. She had interactions with her friends. And then she also does dance. Like, my daughter does dance. And so at dance, they're not allowed to have their phone. So she has plenty of activities where phone is not allowed. And I think that's a great strategy for kind of balancing it all, because I think having no social media is really, really difficult. Like, my son, I have a son, and he tends to have no problem shutting it off. I think it's a personality. It's also really ingrained in the social culture for girls. So I think it's a little bit more difficult with them.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabel, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. Don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu. It took me a while to figure out my mom is more than just a mom. She's got a whole life outside of motherhood. Mary Beth, she is a force to be reckoned with. Successful career, many talents, a great friend group. I could go on and on about my mom. I love her dearly. Well, this Mother's Day, give mom her flowers. She deserves the best. That's why I'm sending farm fresh flowers from Bouqs. That's short for bouquets. And I got you 25% off your entire Books purchase, so you can send some too. Here's why I like Books. Books is different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. Books has also made it easy. I went online, picked the delivery date, and I'm done. Mother's Day is May 12th, right around the corner. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Books now. And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, the wife, aunt, hey, even your grandma. Go to Books.com and use promo code Chris for 25% off. That's Books.com, promo code Chris. Books.com and use promo code Chris.
Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming like female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7? Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. You cannot follow your passion. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
Okay, we can't keep you all day, but a couple more buzzworthy fads I want to deal with because I was actually talking about you this morning with a good friend of mine.
Yay.
About saunas. It is such a big thing right now. People are buying saunas. There's the red light saunas. There's salt saunas. There's wet. There's dry. Is this a thing? And if so, which one? Why?
I think what Chris is asking, Dr. Shaw, is does he have your green light to put a sauna in our home? I was trying to get him a cold plunge also for Christmas, but I couldn't figure out the logistics.
Truth be told, I was in a salt sauna. I love a dry salt sauna. And, you know, and again, I follow a lot of people that, you know, believe in the exhaustion of the body and the stress of the body. And that's what the cold plunge is about. It's the immediate stress and kind of sending your body to certain extremes in a safe way.
Yeah. So sauna data is super strong, but the data, a lot of the data is out of Finland. The Finnish sauna data is the strongest and largest databases because in Finland, everybody does the sauna. Yeah. It is like a way of life. The control group, like the group that they is once a week. And the intervention group was like 4 to 7 times a week. I mean, that's like a lot, right? So we have lots of good data from their culture. And so when people ask me like, what type of sauna? I always tell them the most data we have is from the Finnish communities, and they're all using that traditional dry sauna at 167 degrees Fahrenheit. So if you're following, you know, you want to follow it to the T, that's what I would do. Now, heat shock proteins can be produced with hot yoga, with steam room, with hot bath. There's some data on Japanese hot baths at 100 or 103 degrees Fahrenheit that actually can also produce heat shock proteins. So heat shock proteins is the magic. It's not necessarily, don't necessarily need to be in a particular type of sauna, but the most data we have is a dry sauna. And then, of course, you can probably extrapolate that to red light sauna. You can probably extrapolate that to any kind of heat-related stress, because as soon as you raise your core body temperature and those heat shock proteins are released, you start to get those benefits.
Yeah, we were up, I shot a show up in the Laplands, essentially the North Pole. And, you know, they're doing it because, you know, the sun would come up at like 10:30 or 11 o'clock if it came up at all, and it would go down at 2 in the afternoon and it's dark. And so, you know, they need that light and they get that vitamin D that way. And, you know, obviously we don't need that as much in America, but still the idea of it works. Now, sauna and the cold plunge. Everyone talks about the cold plunge.
People, I feel like we need to call this segment like truth behind the trends. I see everybody on social media with a cold plunge. Do you need to have one in your home? How beneficial is it really?
Yeah, I think it's two different things. So cold plunge really helps with inflammation. So if you're someone who is you're an athlete, you need to recover from an injury, you have a lot of inflammation, that is definitely a great thing to have. I think that you don't necessarily need to have a cold plunge pool. You could do ice bath, which is the old school way, you know, when people would come back from a game or be really sore, like sit in an ice bath, or you could just do a very cold shower. I think the concept is just to be cold. Women sometimes don't need to be as cold, need to be in as cold water to lower their core body temperature. So a very cold shower could be good. But the sauna is a different thing. It's heat shock proteins, which are like cardiovascular fitness. So if you think about it, heat shock proteins are like, if you went on a run, you would produce heat shock proteins, right? And so what if you went on a run and you sat in a sauna? You would get double or presumably a lot more heat shock proteins. And so it's mimicking exercise for you in so many ways. So the same cardiovascular, mood, the brain, all those benefits come, and growth hormone, which I think is like, that was a deal breaker for me. I was like, growth hormone, give me growth hormone. I'm going to do the sauna.
Yeah. The 10 to 20 minutes seems to be the conventional wisdom on those, depending on the temperature of it. This is funny because, I mean, this is a constant debate of, you know, because guys are idiots, you know, we're not smart animals, as you know, doctor. So it's like, oh, I can sit in the ice bath for 30 minutes. It's like, you're past the point of diminishing returns here. Is it that 3 minute kind of golden rule? It's done its job, or is there benefit to staying in there for 5 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, 3 to 5 minutes would be the time that you don't need to go past that.
Well, you know, guys, it's like, well, if one M&M is good, I'm going to eat 30.
Or if my friend can do it for 10 minutes, I'm going to do it for 12.
I can beat you. Yeah.
Like, look how strong I am.
But isn't the idea of when you immerse, it's the shock and it's what it releases in your body pretty much immediately.
Yes. And that's why you're not supposed to do it after an intense training session if you're someone who's trying to grow muscle, because you want that inflammation. So like when people do it wrong, they think, okay, I'm working out really hard and then I should just go immediately to the cold plunge. No, you don't want that, because when you're working out really hard, those inflammatory cytokines and all the things that are happening in your body are sending signals for muscle growth. They're going to be dampened when you go in the cold plunge right
after. Babe, you've been doing it wrong.
Dr. Shah just blew my mind.
Oh, no.
You should wait an hour or go first.
Okay.
Wow.
Or go cold plunge first.
Yeah.
Interesting.
If you're trying to build muscle, it's not like you're going to diminish all your returns, but you're really, think about it. You want those cytokines. You want those signals, those muscle injury signals, you know, to be sent to say, hey, I need to build more muscle because we just worked this out. All of that's dampened when you go straight into the cold
waiting, what, about an hour, you said?
Yeah, about an hour.
Okay. Wow. He's the brain exploding emoji right now. Oh, no.
This is why she's on the show.
I know it's like a lot of people are doing it the wrong way because you don't feel like going in it in the beginning.
Well, the idea is, you've kind of torn your muscles, which is what you do essentially when you're working out or lifting or running or whatever. And then you're like, the thought is, well, I'm going to stop that inflammation.
Yes.
But some of that
inflammation is good.
Yes.
That's some of that inflammation is good.
In that situation.
Right. Oh. So if you're someone who's trying to recover from injury, you go right away.
Yeah.
But if you're someone who's trying to grow your muscles, you kind of want to sit in that inflammation a little bit.
So it start off with that shock and start off with being uncomfortable and then go work out.
Okay, really dumb but basic question. Because I building muscle is something I'm trying to work on now. Should you eat protein before or after your workout? I heard somebody say the other day, never do a fasted workout. But you mentioned earlier, you might not eat till after.
Yeah, that's, I don't know if you've ever seen, like, if people have protein shakes, like as they're walking out of the class, and there's this whole theory that you needed to have protein right away.
Yeah.
And so now we realize you don't. You have to have, you know, you want to have it within 1 to 2 hours of your workout. So before or after, it can be used at any time.
Okay.
I like to do it after because I feel like when your glucose stores are low and you replace your food, best chance to absorb all that protein.
All right, Dr. Shah, I think you might blow our minds with these last questions that we have here. A few more truth behind the trends. I'm going to start gross. Morning breath mouth bacteria. I saw somebody the other day say that you should actually wake up, swoosh water around in your mouth, and swallow everything that's like been in your mouth in the morning, because that's such good bacteria and you need it in your gut. But then they like, but then, you know, then people, other people are like, no, that's the worst bacteria. You need a tongue scraper, brush your teeth first thing in the morning. What are we doing with that morning breath bacteria?
Okay, I'll tell you this. There's really good data that shows that people who use antibacterial mouthwash twice a day have a higher risk for hypertension and all these other cardiovascular diseases. So we do have good bacteria in our mouth, and you don't need to use mouthwash. Like traditional mouthwash has antibacterial compounds in it, and using it twice a day is really bad for you. So there's an extreme, right? Like don't just use mouthwash. I know people who are use mouthwash multiple times a day. That is not good. Now, on the other hand, if you're using a toothpaste that's not antibacterial, that I don't think that there's any reason to swallow the bacteria in your mouth. I think we've pretty much known that, especially if you have cavities or any kind of bacteria growing in your mouth, you don't necessarily want to swallow that.
Good. All married couples are so happy. Get up, get rid of the morning breath, people.
Yeah, get rid of them. Just don't overdo it on the mouthwash, which I think a lot of people do.
I've heard that as well. Yeah, especially the heavy, heavy alcohol laden versions that
Oh, we get it. Alcohol's bad. Okay. All right. Number two. Supplements. There is so much out there about the different supplements we should be taking. I've heard there's a lot of people talking about colostrum right now. I know that you really preach about magnesium. Could you talk about those two and maybe add in to the mix any others that you think are just really underrated supplements that you'd advise people to take?
Yeah, I think colostrum is like a trend, you know, it's like every, you know, collagen trend. I honestly believe that this is not something that you necessarily need in your diet. It's a nice to have, or, you know, cool, trendy thing, sea moss gel, you know, all these things that can't come up that just catch the wave. I think it's gone. It's kind of like that. There's nothing wrong with taking it, but I don't think it's an essential supplement for everyone, and you don't need it necessarily. When it comes to vitamin D, magnesium, omega-3s, those are the top three that I think I see a lot of people benefit from. So vitamin D, if your vitamin D level's low, easy to check, easy to supplement, makes a big difference. It works like a hormone in your body. It is a immune booster. It's a gut health booster. I mean, vitamin D does so many things beyond what we think it does. Same with magnesium. There's like, you know, hundreds of enzymatic processes in the body that magnesium helps with. So having a high magnesium diet, and then if you want to supplement, you can, especially women around that perimenopausal time, they really find benefit in having a higher magnesium diet. And then a new study came out that said, hey, if you eat 550 milligrams of magnesium in your diet, you will have brain health that is much better over the years, like as you age. And so now people are trying to get 550 milligrams of magnesium, and it's really difficult to do it with all diet. So that's why magnesium, I think, has become super popular. But it's something that you can get from nuts and seeds, and it's not, you don't necessarily have to take a supplement if you don't want to, or if you're not in that special group of women who are going through perimenopause who might benefit from that, just from their, for their hormonal symptoms. And then omega-3s, I mean, it's great for your brain. If you're eating a ton of omega-3 fatty fish, great. But if you're not, you can take algae oil, which is great for people who are vegetarian, vegan, or don't like fish. And these are, you know, brain foods and gut foods. And these are things that can improve your body. I don't necessarily think you need to take them all in supplement form. You're probably getting a lot of vitamin D while you're out. And if you're eating a really healthy diet and your levels are normal, you don't necessarily need to be supplementing with it. But those are the three that I think a lot of people benefit from.
Okay, great. My last question for you. I feel like my Instagram feed is full of people telling me, if you grate lemon peel into your food, or if you eat 6 cups of broccoli a day, that you will reduce your risk of cancer by 90%. It's like all these things of these, like, I feel like it's just people creating content like for the comments and what are some foods that you actually recommend that have true and real anti-cancer properties, if those foods exist at all?
Yeah, fiber. I mean, fiber. So when I talked to the three F's and I said fasting, so fasting overnight is a great way to, so when you get your glucose levels down and when you let your gut rest, you also improve your inflammation level. So that's a strategy for anti, you know, like preventing cancer and inflammation. Then fitness, of course, exercise is a huge strategy for fending off cancer. And then the food is really high fiber, high fermented, high protein diet, meaning high fiber means broccoli, nuts, you know, salads, vegetables, fruit, berries. Those are like, that's what I mean by fiber, not necessarily a fiber supplement or something. And then fermented probiotic foods like your yogurt, your fermented cottage cheese, your apple cider vinegar, your kimchi, your sauerkraut. A lot of these things that we don't have enough of in our diet is something that we really see that improves gut health.
Are you an apple cider vinegar believer?
I'm not an apple cider vinegar believer for the weight loss or whatever. Yeah. But it can be one of the fermented foods that you have.
The gut. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It can help your gut. And then vinegar in general is a really good blood sugar balancer. So adding it to your salads or whatever. And then eating enough protein, but not too much. So protein over people who are high level bodybuilders and eating excessive protein, that can be pro-cancerous. But most women and most people I know, busy people I know, are under eating their protein, especially as they age. So getting that adequate protein is really good. But I would say the biggest thing you can do for to prevent cancer is that real food, fiber, and exercise. So like the berries, the broccoli, the, you know, all of those real foods that don't have labels that have a ton of fiber in them, they help your body clean out, especially those broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprout family. They have, there's sulfur compounds that really help clear out toxins from your body and help you prevent cancer.
Wow.
Dr. Shah, I feel like we have enough for multiple episodes. Yes. Thank you for giving me hope in the face of the Ozempic craze.
I love it.
And for all this great advice.
I love it. Dr. Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Amy Shah, you can follow her on Instagram.
At FastingMD and see all of her cute videos. Thank you for making such bite-sized, digestible,
speaking of the gut,
fiber-filled content. Yes.
I love it.
She gives you the three Fs.
Yeah.
And you give an F.
No, we really appreciate it. Thank you for your time. And we will, because I know there will be more fads and more things, so we will have you on again.
I love it. Thank you so much for having me. Have a fun time there.
Thank you. It was so good to meet you.
Yes, talk soon. Likewise. Talk soon.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram at the most dramatic pod ever. And make sure to write us a review and leave us 5 stars. I'll talk to you next time. You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.